At Soy Gold.
Cheese curds tossed in seasoning on a bed of crinkle cut fries with a demi-glaze and cheese sauce drizzle topped with herbs and more cheese.
At Soy Gold. By the way, Darren Breeden in 2018 set the world record eating 5 pounds, 2 ounces of cheese curds in 6 minutes.
At Soy Gold. Man, that sounds kind of tasty. Moving Wisconsin forward, one joke at a time, this is Kristen Bry with As Goes Wisconsin.
Yada, yada, yada.
Hello, Wisconsin!
Welcome, welcome, welcome to As Goes Wisconsin with Kristen Bry. We finally have an official opener.
That was catchy.
Isn't that catchy?
Yeah.
Brian Kelly, just a master audio file? I don't know.
Not just a pretty face.
Yeah. So I'm very excited. We're going to change it up with different quotes every day. We got an official opener. We're like a real show now. Happy Hump Day. Happy National Hot Dog Day.
To all those who celebrate.
And happy Bucks and Six anniversary.
Bucks and Six anniversary?
Anniversary?
I don't know.
I don't know exactly what the official title is, but for all who celebrate and were there a year ago when the Bucks closed out Game 6 and beat the Phoenix Suns and brought home a championship after 50 years.
Even if you weren't there, even though like 100,000 people were there.
Were you there? I was there. We'll get at that in a second. Okay. All right, we got Jane Matinera on the board and back. I would say to a returning champion, but I did beat you in the debate last time.
Does your father think that you defeated me in that debate?
He didn't listen because he was golfing.
I hear Mr. Bray is on my side.
All right, well. Coming back, first time, our first returning guest, Joseph Pecky, Democratic strategist, Democrat campaign veteran. Welcome back.
Good to be back. Does this make me the first official friend of As Goes Wisconsin? How many punches do I have to get on my punch card before I'm
You're officially
legit?
A friend? I think, you know, I'm a pretty friendly person, so I think most people, as soon as they come on, are friends. It's a couple more until you're family.
Oh, okay. Well, got to have goals.
All right. Well, where were you a year ago today?
I was on my couch. We were watching at home. We had one friend come over. And we had a bottle of champagne on ice, which we popped after the clock struck zero. It was great.
So you guys were expecting us to win. You went into it thinking, or was it just prepared in case?
It was prepared just in case. We felt really good after game five. And we wanted to have it on hand just in case. And it turned out it was needed. We also were like kind of afraid to jinx the team because we had watched all the previous finals games at home on the couch. And we were like, oh no, if we change it.
Oh, that's funny.
We could mess with the universe. We didn't want to do that. We didn't want to be responsible for that. I can't live with that kind of shame.
Well, we were at the game.
Inside.
We're inside.
Not outside.
We had tickets to the game. That was a big surprise Mike gave me. And it's actually, so today is officially 1 month until we get married, but it's also the 1 year anniversary of that game. And I joked on my, I think it was Instagram, saying, we'll see. We'll see if the wedding outranks that day in my memory of with you. And he came back pretty quickly saying, yeah, it won't.
It's going to be great. You're going to have a wonderful time.
It's going to be great. We want to talk about wedding stuff and marriage and marriage equality.
Marriage.
Later in the show. But I wanted to, on Monday, we already, you know, in the immediate aftermath of the Democratic Senate debate, we talked about it some. But now we have a Democratic strategist who is not affiliated with any of the campaigns, correct? And so you can be a little objective objective as far as talking about the campaigns and the debate performances in a more removed way than I think my dear friend Nada could, because she is very much gunning for one candidate. And I wanted to bring this back and more kind of ask your thoughts as you watch it as someone who has prepped people for debates, who has watched probably hundreds of thousands of hours of debates, whether it's for a candidate you're working with or just because you're trying to learn.
Yeah, more time spent watching debates than I would care to admit.
Because I would say I am certainly not a debate strategist or specialist. I watch these things and just it's like, how does this make me feel? Mm-hmm. And I have opinions on it versus what I think is the best way to go about or train or what they should have done to earn certain points and blah, 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 blah. So I guess general question out of the gate, what'd you think?
So two big picture thoughts. The first was, what a striking image that stage was, left to right, how young all of the candidates are at a time when our politics are increasingly dominated by a pair of 80-year-old men, Joe Biden and Donald Trump. What a breath of fresh air to have five candidates, all of whom are very credible, very knowledgeable, and clearly able to do the job if elected. And the oldest one is 44.
Yeah.
Five candidates under the age of 45. That's amazing. And I just thought that was a really nice contrast to our politics. And I'm sure people noticed that.
Well, not only that, also we had at least one woman. We mm-hmm. have a black man. We have an Indian man. Lassery's Jewish, right?
Yes.
Yeah. So it's like, it was like, it's more than just young people. It's just a huge,
young, diverse
range.
Field.
Yeah. So that, I agree. I would agree that that was, that is a cool thing to see that you don't necessarily see.
Yeah, so that came through. The other big thing that I thought was really smart and really impressive is what a good job they did of making the case against Senator Johnson. Ultimately, the number one objective for all of the Democratic candidates for Senate is to retire Ron Johnson. During a 60-minute debate, his name came up 20 different times. So you couldn't go more than, by my math, 1 or 2 minutes without, or 2 or 3 minutes without hearing Senator Johnson's name. That is where all of these candidates need to train their fire or choosing to train their fire. You know, there was a potential for that the debate to turn into kind of a intra-party food fight. And it didn't do that, with one exception that I'm sure we'll get to. But I thought they did a nice job of keeping their attention focused on Senator Johnson. Mr. Trump, for example, only came up 4 times by my count. So I thought it was a great looking stage, a great sounding stage that sets up a nice contrast for the fall, whoever it is, and really shows how strong the Democratic Party is going to be for years to come. Because the reality is, one of those candidates on the stage is going to be our nominee. The other four aren't. But I tell you what, those other four aren't going away. They're going to be part of the Democratic Party going forward for years to come. And that's great.
Yeah. And, you know, when you were on here the first time, which was July 6th, I think.
Your memory's better than mine then.
We kind of talked about, because it was the first time we had seen Rebecca Clayfish start to directly go at Tim Michaels. And so then we talked about going negative, depending on how you define that, and that as a strategy in a campaign. And like you said, all of these campaigns have been on the Democratic side largely hands off as far as how hard they go at each other. I did hear a lot of, I'm the only one. Well, I'm the only one. I'm the only one.
Hopefully nobody made that a drinking game, because they would have been very intoxicated at the end of that hour.
That was I'm the only one.
The only candidate on this stage who, fill in the blank.
Yes, exactly. And so you think they did a good, who did the best job of differentiating themselves from the crowd?
So I think this is a really interesting point about the I'm the only candidate on this stage. That's a form of drawing a contrast and setting up the differences with their opponent that is sort of a full step short of going negative. Yes. And so when I take a step back and go, who did the best job? I thought Ola Kara actually was like, it did an incredible job. He had a little bit easier job to do because he is the least well known among the five candidates. Listen, almost every single person who's going to cast a ballot in the Democratic primary has at some point encountered Mandela or Sarah or Thomas or Alex, or have seen an ad, or have gotten a mailer. Ola Kara is sort of the new face, and he did a really nice job over and over again, going back to his core message, which is about changing the system. If you want to change the outcomes of our politics, you have to change the system itself. He did that, and I think it probably turned some heads. It's why he worked so hard to get into the debate, to sort of level the field against these candidates who have more resources and are better known. So I thought, like, on points, Ola Kara did the best job of standing out. He was crisp. He was prepared. He, you know, answered kind of the pushbacks from the moderators. He met what I would call a credibility threshold. You know, some people who are already elected to statewide office, voters will go, okay, they're in statewide office, they're a politician, they can be a politician in a different job. Ola Kara, as sort of the new kid on the block, didn't have that built in. through the stories that he told about the work of the Millennial Action Project, I thought he met that threshold. And I just thought it was a really impressive performance. I thought the other, you know, most impressive performance, more from a political standpoint, was probably Barnes. You know, as the front runner, he has led every single poll that's ever been conducted in this race. His job was to not make a mistake and to start, you know, positioning himself for a broader audience, people who are tuning in who might be independent voters, might not vote in, you know, in a primary. And I thought he did a nice job of A, staying out of trouble, didn't make any mistakes, and second, got back to his message of that middle class, you know, upbringing and his biography time and time again as somebody who, as you mentioned, has prepped candidates for these, sort of come up with debate strategies. That's what I'm looking for, is like, what was their game plan? And I thought those two did the best job. I thought sort of the next best was probably Godlewski. Her strategy was clearly to differentiate herself and, you know, clearly make a play for female voters. I thought she did that exceptionally well.
Yeah, I would agree with that. Well, after the break, which we are coming up soon, we have a little bit more of best, better, best, worst superlatives as far as performance. But I would say the thing that stuck out to me was the not answering questions, which is a classic politician thing. And I mentioned this on Monday as far as I thought it was hilarious when Lazzari just didn't. It's not about me with the inflation question. And what is that as a strategy? Like, why is that? So there's not sound bites that can then get cut up into an ad of why sometimes you don't just lean into the thing that everyone already knows. Because I felt like Mandela did that. I forgot exactly how he worded it, but he kind of referenced the fact of his property taxes. And he's like, I think there's enough stories about me and my money issues or whatever when he answered the question about inflation. And I appreciate that as a voter, of someone who can own who they are and their mistakes and their past. And I feel like Lazzari just totally missed that, and I not less about that specific instance and more about a strategy of when you're asked a question and you just don't answer it.
Yes. So two things on that. The first is with Barnes, I actually thought he went pretty quickly through that and assumed more information than the audience has. It is entirely possible that if he is the nominee, everyone in the state of Wisconsin is going to know that he's missed some parking ticket payments that he owed, and, you know, maybe was late on a mortgage payment once or twice, which happens, right? But I thought he went a little quick past that. In terms of Lazzari, what's he going to say? If he says it hasn't affected me because I come from wealth, you know, that might be authentic and real, but I'm not sure it's the answer you want to give. I thought he did a fine job of deflecting.
All right, we'll be right back after the break with debate superlatives.